That's awesome. And so Maddie messaged me and was like, this is my friend, they're an amazing artist, maybe you should have them on the podcast. And I was like, I'll see.
I passed the test.
Yeah, I was like, I'll see. And I started going through some of your art, and I was like, oh, this is kooky, crazy stuff. Oh, I was thinking of that guy that used to draw like Fritz the Cat, like that, those vibrant, almost like Frank Kozik too, like those vibrant colors. Let's talk about art, man. How'd you get into it? When did you first doodle, and when did you this is my thing.
We're gonna dive into some vulnerable territory. Oh, are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm not scared. You got a glass of water? You know, if you start crying, you drink water.
Oh, I got this.
Okay, all right. What's up, man? So when did you first, like, were you always just doodling as a kid?
Yeah, as a kid, I had like a little box that had all of my drawing supplies, and I would just draw all the time. I'd draw so much, my neck would hurt. What? I would constantly just be sketching and doodling. I would draw pictures for my parents. And as the little entrepreneur that I was, I used to sell drawings in elementary school for like $2.
That's a good price.
I know, very reasonable. So
were you going to a private school?
Like, no. Like, afford $2 party? Absolutely not. I was just a hustler. I was like, give me $2, I'll draw you a hand. Like,
that's dope.
So, you know, I drew for a long time. And then, you know, I went to art classes in like junior high and high school a little bit. And that was kind of the extent of like my education with art. I taught myself everything through like how to draw books. I have one of the original how to draw books I used at home. It's like a very basic how to draw cartoons. And I love referencing it. It's nothing like crazy, but it's just nice. It gives you kind of the details of how to do emotions on faces and stuff like that. And as I got older, you know, the Depressed Happily is my brand. And without a surprise, that's in regards to my bipolar disorder.
At what point did you put like... did you make the connection between like art and mental health? Like, does it help you? Like, does it help you cope?
Significantly.
Like, looking back now, do you realize, or do you think that you were using art as a coping mechanism to like detach?
Well, the wild thing is like, I stopped doing any kind of art up until I was like 25.
Oh, wow. You know,
I didn't touch anything. Like, my mental health started to take a decline. I started showing symptoms of bipolar disorder when I was about 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. I started having like intrusive thoughts and things like that. And you know, depression takes everything you love away from you, and art was one of them. But I was so obsessed with it. I loved the colors. I was obsessed with like cartoons. Andy Warhol's a big hero of mine creatively. I feel like that, me and every other artist in the world.
Yeah.
And I came back to it because I went to the hospital and I had checked in for my depression, and I had no idea what was wrong with me. I just knew that I was super sad, and a lot of stuff was going on in my head. And I was diagnosed with depression while I was in the hospital, but they had an art hour and they were like, come on in, like, let's draw. So I sat down, I told myself, don't think about it, just do it. And I made this dark and desolate landscape.
With, I was like, going to say, do you remember what came to you that time down?
It was a dark, desolate landscape with a hollow dead tree on it with no light inside. It was just dark. And I remember walking away from that. They said, we're going to hang all of your art up. And I was like, don't do that. And I remember walking away from it and just thinking like, wow, like I feel like a dead, hollow just tree, you know. I feel like this painting, and it stuck with me. And so when I got out of the hospital, the obsession just really began again, and I was like, okay, I think like I really want to paint. So I had bought some supplies from Michael's with the coupon, and Michael's, I got home.
Michael's coupons are the shit.
That was my first job out of high school, was working at Michael's. So I was like, can't go without a coupon.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I just started painting, and I didn't stop for like 8 months. Mm-hmm. And I just had so much to say. Like, it just, and I took the same tactic of like, don't think, just do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how like it got going, and it really became a coping mechanism. And I think as a kid, it probably was too. I just don't, you know, I never looked at it like that, but now it definitely is a coping mechanism for me, and I can't stop.
I'm glad that you can't stop, and I'm glad that you found that coping mechanism. When you decided to go to the hospital, like, what made you decide to go to the hospital? Because especially, okay, like, 25 years old, like, how many times did you hear people say, like, come on, just snap out of it. You have so much to look forward to. Like, you have, like, how are you, you know what I'm talking about.
And I kept it hidden from everybody.
Oh, okay.
And I just, I slept all the time if I wasn't working. And I just thought that everyone's going to think I'm crazy, mm-hmm. Which ironically, like, maybe a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah. No, and, I embrace the crazy. Yeah.
I do now, especially now. And I worked at the hospital I checked into, and my boss was the one that was like, you don't look well. Like, oh, you look like you're dead behind your eyes. And so she convinced me, and she's like, hey, there's nothing wrong with, like, checking in. So she walked me into the ER. I got checked in, and it's very bizarre having your coworkers wheel you to the mental health section of the hospital.
Wow.
And having your coworkers, I used to stock the hospital there, and I'd have my coworkers come in and stock the hospital. The nurses would come up and they're like, did you want any anti-anxiety medication while your coworkers come in here? I'm like, yeah, it would be really cool. Thank you so much for the Valium.
That would help. That would help. Wow. And so when you stayed in the hospital, like, after the hospital, did you, like, start seeing a therapist? Like, how have you maintained
the
last few years since that?
Yeah, I have. I've got my psychiatrist. It took me a long time to get on medication because I really did not want to just jump into medication. I wanted to give myself an opportunity to really, really dive into therapy and all of those things that I could do, because there is an over medication problem in the world, and I didn't want to be part of that. But I definitely needed it. Mm-hmm. But I started with a lot of therapy. I went to therapy probably at least once a week. And then now I go, like, once every couple weeks if I need to. I'll never get rid of my therapist. I was going to say,
have you had the same therapist?
I've had him for a couple years now. And he's stuck with me. He's my guy.
Okay.
But I got the medication, and I take a mood stabilizer. Stabilizes my mood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a game changer to have, like, that care. But it's, getting better and thriving in life is a dedication to yourself. And it takes a lot of work. And you just have to put yourself first and not make an excuse and just do it. And that's exactly what I've done.
You said something right now that is so important. Like, I used to listen to Dr. Drew on Love Lines a lot in the 2000s, like, early 2000s, late 90s. And I really credit Love Lines for helping me with my addiction. But Dr. Drew one time said the most poignant thing, and he said, the trick is not to live after sobriety, it's to thrive after sobriety, to, like, find that. Like, don't just be happy with, like, oh, I'm alive. No, go fucking live, right?
Yeah, that is so true. Honestly, like, I talk to a lot of people about mental health care. I've been an advocate. I've helped people check in the hospital. I provide resources. Outside of my art, it's a huge passion of mine. Mm-hmm. So I think when you go through such a significant and very sad period of your life, you don't want other people to feel that way. And that's right. You're never going to change that, but you can do what you can to help other people get out of that space in their life.
Yeah. Is it hard to, like, not be hands-on about it, to, like, just be like, okay, look, I'm going to open this door, and if you want to go through it, go through it. Like, but do some people, like, you just want to push them through?
Oh my God. I've definitely been, there's been a few times where I've been pushy, and I was like, I can't be your therapist. I need you to, like, help yourself.
Mm.
And I've got a lot of much better boundaries. You learn as you go. My biggest thing that I tell people is, like, you are the solution to your problem. Right. You're going to be the one that's going to have to fix this. Nobody else can do it. Medication is not going to fix everything. You actually have to, like, dive in.
It's like, I make the comparison. It's like to be happy and thriving, it's like a clock. Like, if you look at a clock and you look at how a clock works, and, like, all these different wheels push and pull, and, like, the medication is one of it, right? But then there's also, like, you said boundaries. Like, how important are boundaries? Like, once you realize, like, what sets you off and, like, what isn't good for you, right? Like, how important are those boundaries?
Oh, man. You know, and I set boundaries with everybody. And it's been a hard, you know, it's hard. I can be very nice, and I want to not hurt anyone's feelings. And boundaries can make people feel like it's against them. Mm-hmm. But boundaries are there to benefit your relationship with anyone, whether it's work, your parents, your friends. Friends, your love life. Boundaries are super important. And there's a middle ground of, like, control versus boundaries that people kind of have to understand as well. Some people use the term boundaries in a very
I might be guilty of that sometimes. So, like, I'm huge on, like, well, Virgo, like, I'm huge on controlling, like, the situation that I'm in.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll be like, look, I'm just setting boundaries. I'm like, no, you're being a dick.
It's like it's a cognitive behavioral therapy technique, but something I do a lot for myself is to flip the situation.
Ooh.
Any situation, I think about it from the opposite perspective. And if it was somebody, if I was doing something to somebody, how would I feel about that? Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of snapped me out of sometimes if I've set a hard boundary that's really unobtainable and I flip the situation in my mind, I'm like, Ashley, that's very controlling. Don't do that. Like, if that's not a boundary, you're just being a dick.
yeah you mentioned we might go back to mental health. Yeah, I don't know, absolutely. but you mentioned Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
And let me tell you my Andy Warhol story that I knew about as much about Andy Warhol as, like, any kid growing up in the 80s just watching, like, here and there. But one day me and my friend were in LA and we were looking for something to do, and this is back when, like, you would, like, look through the newspaper, and we saw that at the LA Museum of Art there was an Andy Warhol exhibit, and we're like, let's go. And it fucking, dude, I got sick. Like, it, like, I went through so much emotion and, like, so much, like, like, because some of the stuff is, like, disturbing. Like, some of his work was disturbing. And I remember, like, I got sick. Like, but it, like, it changed my, it really changed my world. Like, I, like, that Andy Warhol, like, exhibit. And then, like, I bought a book about him. And his whole thing about just surrounding yourself with all of the, I'm going to say weirdos. Like, surrounding yourself with all the weirdos. And, but, how did Warhol come into your world, and what does Warhol mean to you?
Yeah, so he actually kind of played a part in my transition into painting again too. But originally, I mean, I found him as a little kid. Like, my family was not this big art family. Like, we weren't those people that knew, like, all these different artists, and I just stumbled across him when I was, like, 5. I think I saw something.
Uh-huh.
And I was immediately obsessed. And
yeah. Was it the colors, or just
I think it was just kind of like everything. It was like colors, that his use of, like, doing, like, black with really bold colors, like, just all of that stuff. And I just loved it. And so, of course, when you tell your parents you like something, then they're like, we're gonna make this your whole personality.
Yeah.
And so, you know, growing up and everything, I had, you know, different little Andy Warhol things. I had, like, a calendar, a tote bag, like, all kinds of stuff. So when I had actually gotten out of the hospital, they had an exhibit at the Modern Art Museum in San Francisco.
Okay.
And one of my best friends lived there at the time and said, hey, I got us tickets. Like, oh, I have I've got a membership. Like, let's go. She's like, I know you really like him. And this was before I really started, like, getting back into painting, just out of the hospital. Very sensitive. And we get there, and as soon as we walked, like, one step into the exhibit, I had to turn around for a second because I started to cry. Wow. I was like, this is so wild. This is just like meeting, like, your hero.
Yeah.
And it was such an incredible experience. Like, you know, he's got some pretty wild stuff. But, like, seeing it all in person and seeing, like, his journals and seeing his sketches and all the different paintings and just different series that he's done, it was so empowering to see that. And I left there thinking, like, wow, I think, like, I really want to paint again. Like, this is, there's so, you know, that and then being in the hospital were, like, the two big significant moments that really got me back into, like, my creativity and created that obsession for myself again.
Wow. Have you been to New York?
No, but I really want to go.
Yeah, I've been once. I'm obsessed with New York. Like, I just think, like, oh And I've been one time, and I was only there for like 3 nights, 2 days, like not nearly enough time.
Oh, one day. Like, I really want to travel to Europe. I'd love to see the art there. A couple artists I really like are in London. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to go everywhere for the art. I went to Mexico City last year, and I got to see Frida's house.
Been there.
Beautiful. How dope was that? Oh, my God. I mean,
the kitchen, like, not just because, like, you think Frida Kahlo's house, you're like, oh, what? Like, but you're like, she fucking lived there.
Oh, and it's just, like, the traditional, like, paper mache style art. I mean, just incredible. And the use of colors. Like, her paintings are beautiful, but just, like, the whole home itself. Like, everything they had was just incredible.
You know what? What made me cry at the Frida Kahlo house was seeing her wheelchair set up in front of the easel. And thinking to myself, like, fucking nothing stopped her.
No, that's, you know, when you have, like, painting is like an obsession. You know, when you're, I feel like anyone that's found their, like, creative niche, whether it's writing, whether it's, like, comedy, painting, music, and you're, like, that's your passion and your thing, it is such an obsession. Like, I'll take pictures of my in-progress stuff, and if I'm, you know, out and about staring at my phone, I'm staring at the painting in progress and just thinking, like, what do I want to do next? What's coming to me next? Like, I can't stop.
I think about my sets that way. Like, I'm constantly, like, I think about comedy all day long. Like, I'm thinking about, like, I should move this joke here. I could use this to tie this joke to this joke. Like, I'm like, you're right. It's an, like, once you find your thing, it's an obsession, right?
Yeah, I can't stop. I mean, if it's been more than like a couple weeks since I've painted, I just start feeling like a piece of shit. And I'm like, you need to get back to it, girl. Like,
how is it? Is it a fine line between keeping it an obsession and a healthy obsession?
I think that it is, and I haven't figured out that line yet.
Okay.
Because, and it really depends on, like, where my mood's at. There was a show I did last year, and it was a solo show I did, and I'd asked them, like, how many pieces I should submit, and they were like, I mean, whatever fills these walls is what you've got. So, whatever you want to put out there, that's great. So, I spent 2 months painting over 20 paintings, and I did not use all of them because they did not fit on all
Were you happy with all the 20 paintings?
I was pretty satisfied with most of them. There's a couple of them that I think I just kind of like did to like have them, you know. And those ones I don't really love as much. Right. Anytime I paint something just to, you know, like I'm forcing it out and I'm just trying to make something look cool, mm-hmm. It is my least favorite pieces, and I'll cover them up every time.
Do you do commissions? Like, do commissions sometimes feel that way?
So it's funny that you say that, because I just got a message this morning that I woke up to, and it was somebody asking me if I could paint them a Joker painting, and I was like, no. Absolutely not. Have you looked at what I paint?
Yeah, that's not you.
And so I've done commissions in the past. I'm very, very particular about how I do them, though, because I have a process where I ask people, like, what feeling do you want me to invoke in this piece? What colors are off limits? What colors are on limits? And then if they want me to do textured paint or regular, and that's about the amount that they're allowed to contribute.
Yeah, I have this thing about, like, when I haven't asked anyone to do a commission, because it, like, even like when I ask Maddie to do tattoos, I'm like, look, feel free to put your artistic, like, I'm not asking you to do this, like, and they understand, like, they've done so many tattoos for me that, like, we have this understanding of, like, they kind of get what, well, I think they did, like, a great job with this, the haha tattoo.
Oh, I love that.
Like, I just explained to them what I wanted, and, like, they came up with that letter styling. I was like, oh, that's freaking perfect, you know, and I'm so happy with it.
You know, I find that when you give artists, I mean, even, like, hairstylists, I told my hairstylist, like, knock yourself out, you know, go for it, and I'm always satisfied with the result, and if I'm not, it grows out.
Yeah.
And same with, like tattoos and stuff. I just got a tattoo recently from an artist, Jen Romo. She's really cool, and they're really cool, and I gave them full freedom. I was like, I just want to have an American tradition style. It's a tattoo for my cat. and I really want it to be like a leopard of some sort, yeah. and I just want hearts on it. Go right crazy. Right and on. I'm always satisfied with whatever the artist comes up with, because mm-hmm. I don't want my stuff tattooed to me, because I get tired of my own art, you know? It's like a moment in time, and when it passes, I'm like... I was just
saying, do you outgrow it? Like, you don't want to get stuck in that moment, because maybe it wasn't a good moment that inspired this piece of art, right?
No, and it's like, I describe my work as like a caricature of my emotions, mm-hmm. and I, you know, you move past these emotions, and you grow past how you're feeling, and some pieces I make are really significant moments in my life that I'm like, ooh, I'd love to keep that for a while, but a lot of the times I'm like, I've grown past this already, I don't want to look at it anymore, mm-hmm. you know, I'm happy with the end result, but it doesn't mean that I want it around all the time. Well,
I think like we could kind of like piggyback this on mental health, right? Like they say a lot of times, like when something is making you super anxious, is like, okay, sit with it, what is causing it, and move past it, right? So yeah. could that be said for the paintings?
I would definitely feel like that's definitely a piece of it. Like, I don't want to hold on to those anxious feelings anymore, so why am I going to keep it around my house?
Yeah, so here, give me some money and you take it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, I have pieces in my house from other artists that I feel like they probably feel the same way about their own art. Mm-hmm. I do know artists that are like, I don't know how you sell your stuff and get rid of it and paint over things. Like, I could never do that. And I'm like, I'll paint over it tomorrow.
The painting over sounds crazy. Do a lot of artists? That's got to be a practice by a lot of artists.
I'm sure that there are. Do you know some artists that do the same thing? But like, you know, I just get tired of it. And I'm like, I live in a studio apartment. I have only so much room. Canvases can be expensive. And if I'm not married to a painting and I don't, it like, it's one that I like, but I'm not in love with, I have no qualms about painting over it. I'm like, mm-hmm. I got the picture. It's fine. Like, move on.
Well, I think it's like you got out of it what you needed, right? Yeah. Like you got out of that moment. It didn't end up being what you thought it was going to be. And so let's move on.
Exactly.
Ooh, that's hard. I have some jokes that like are just horrible, but I won't give up on trying to make them good, you know? And I'm like, my friends will be like, you're gonna try that joke again? The joke is not working. Like,
dedication. Not,
like, no one gets that. The joke's only funny to you and us, but in a sad way. You know? Oh man. You know, going back to the Joker, I guess like if they wanted the okay, so I'm thinking about your style and how they said, can you draw the Joker? I think your style could capture the early like 80s cartoon Joker.
Yeah.
But not the dark, menacing Joker that has evolved, like especially with like Joaquin Phoenix's portrayal of the Joker. Like,
no, and those
I wouldn't
are
even
cool,
want that in my house.
No. I want like the campy, like Jack Nicholson looking Joker.
Yeah, yeah. The animated, very colorful. Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't, I'm not the artist that likes to recreate things. Like, I had a piece that I just made not too long ago called Head Games.
Okay.
It's got like a little demon behind, it's me, basically, is like this little caricature. The demon's like playing with the hair, essentially. Uh-huh. Like it's standing behind it.
Oh, that's creepy.
And the whole idea came from watching the Barbie movie.
Okay.
You know, as everyone else in the world has watched it.
Yeah, I watched it twice.
Me too.
Yeah, I watched it twice.
And I had this canvas that's a rectangle, and I was like, this is the perfect Barbie box for a painting.
Oh, yeah.
And I was sitting on that idea and I was obsessed with it, but I just wasn't happy with it. I was like, every time I tried to start, I'm like, no. And it's because I didn't want to recreate Barbie. I wanted to take like the essence almost mm-hmm. and put it in a painting. And so I had like a therapy appointment. We talked about intrusive thoughts and everything. And I remember stepping away and looking at my canvas. I'm like, I think I need to like paint, and not specifically about like intrusive thoughts, but I just, therapy really gets me in a creative mood, and I don't always know what it is that I'm going to make based on therapy, but like it's usually something that we talked about that's going to be an idea that gets worked into a piece. And we had this like we finished the conversation, I stared at this canvas, and I just kept thinking like, okay, maybe not Barbie, but like what else about Barbie did you like? I actually have a Barbie tattoo, so I'm a big Barbie lover.
Okay.
Even before the movie.
All right. I wasn't going to call you out.
And so I thought about things as a kid that I liked, and I really love those, like, it's like a bust of Barbie, but it's the hair. You play with the hair. That's what it's meant for. It's like a hair doll, okay, essentially. Yeah. And so that's the concept I came up with. I was like, let me make myself as my own version of, like, a Barbie, and I'll do my own version where it's, like, the little hair kind of doll. And you know, I started with that idea, and then I layered in having like a little demon behind. So it's like a demon playing with me as like a doll, and it's intrusive thoughts.
That's sick. Are you done with that?
Yeah, I finished it. It's on my Instagram. I think. I even put it on my website. I can't remember, but, yeah, it's like one of my favorite little pieces that I did. Cause I happened to like loop these two things in unintentionally together, and it was just so much fun. So that's as much as I'll do with like recreating something. I'll take the idea of it, kind of find a piece of it, but
like your interpretation of that.
Yeah, I just,
of that emotion, I guess.
I do not like recreating things. I get so bored. I'm like, that I sounds have boring. So much shit in my head already that I can like get out. Being in
a cover band.
Yeah, I'm like, that's cool for you, you know. I'll watch it, but
yeah. How many pieces are you currently working on, or is it too many? Are you good at that? Are you good
at like? I'll take on way too many projects. I actually have a project that I'm working on with a group of people right now, and then I have a show that I'm talking about doing with another artist in February, and then I have a piece I'm almost done with right now, and then I have another kind of sculpture that I've had in my head that I've been working on kind of getting out. So I am constantly like, I'm sure it's probably the manic energy a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm always just, I can't be sedentary. I can't be bored. I have to be like doing stuff. So I will take on a million projects at once.
What about, would you ever take on one of these wide open walls projects? Would that be something you do as a group? No, I've seen them do it by themselves, right? Would you take on one of those projects?
I don't know if I'd want to take one of them on. Uh-huh. It's not that I don't want to. I hope artists get compensated properly for that, because it is so much work, and you know, and I also just, I don't know if I want to do murals. I have a huge fear of heights.
Okay.
Massive. I will freeze. And so murals just freak me out for that. I'd probably just hire somebody to paint it for me.
I wonder if those, are, okay, so like, I grew up in the 80s, graffiti, street art, right? What, is there like a difference in those types of artists? Is there street artists, like graffitis? Do you know where I'm trying to go with this?
Yeah, graffiti art is incredible. I actually buy my art supplies from a graffiti supply store. I go to Leave Your Mark Sack. Love that place. It's a lot of spray paint and everything. I buy a water-based pen refill as my acrylic paint. It's amazing. But the art, I mean, I love graffiti art. Like, street art is incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, I know people get mad that it's like, oh, you know, they're tagging the city. But I think it's such a great way to, like... I'm so
over that.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, I get mad when
I get mad when they cover over it. I think that's uglier than... You know,
yeah,
I don't know. But
my only gripe is like across the way from me, there was a mural, and then somebody tagged it and they painted over the mural. And I was like, okay, well, now I don't like that.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
You
know,
you can tag, there's so many walls that are available to you that you can tag.
Yeah,
that's my only gripe. But other than that, I mean, street art is just like, I love, I don't even know how they come up with the tags that they come up with, and it's just so cool. Like, I love looking at it. When I take the train to the Bay Area, I'm just looking out the window, like, wow, look at the new art.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. Where was I going to go? Did you grow up in Sacramento?
I was born in Modesto. I lived in Ceres specifically, which almost no one knows where Ceres is. It's basically Modesto.
Is that, how do you spell Ceres?
What is it? Ceres?
Okay, so that's wrong. That's another one of the cities that I see on the dating websites, and I'm like, that's too far.
It's too far.
Okay, all right.
But I moved when I was 9. I moved to Reno, and we moved a lot. But I tell everyone I'm from Sacramento because Sacramento is the first place that has ever felt like home for me.
How long have you been in Sacramento now?
I've been in Sac off and on for the last like decade.
Okay, All right.
And I lived in Rockland in high school for like a semester, I think like 2 years or something, but I graduated from continuation school, which is more fun than Rockland.
Sounds like it.
But that was like as long as I've lived here is probably since I was like 15 or 16. And then downtown Sac, I've been for like 10 years.
How much do you love Sacramento?
I love Sacramento. You know, every city has its problems, but it's really what you put into the city.
Yeah.
And I have so much love for this city. And I feel like we have such like the art community here. Like, I love the queer community. I mean, it's just such a fun little place to live. And it's so, like, I think underloved. I get so mad when people like shit on Sacramento. I'm like, don't do that.
But also, I kind of like that it's kind of like our little secret.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, yeah, don't, yeah, it's not cool here. Don't move here.
Don't do it. I know, I'll catch myself and I'm like, but you don't want to move here. You can just come here for a weekend. Like,
yeah. It's, I love that it's kind of like our little secret.
Yeah. It's just so much fun. Like, there's just kind of like everything to do. We have fantastic food, so I'm not mad about that.
I was about to talk about food. Let's talk about food, man. Yeah. Because you know why? You know why I want to talk about food? It's fucking, it's ramen season.
I know. Oh my God. I love, what is it? I think it's Ryujin ramen.
The one right by the Safeway? Yes. Like right around the corner? Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
It was like my favorite. I will pay all the money for DoorDash if I don't feel like going out. I'll go there. Like, I mean, twice a week I'm about to have ramen. Like,
oh, really?
I'll do it. Love it.
Anytime I get sick, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get ramen.
Oh, like, you know, almost looking forward to it. I'm like, oh, no, I have a cold. Yeah, I have to order ramen. I need ramen.
Yeah. How spicy do you go?
Oh, I have acid reflux, you know? Oh, so I'm okay. Like, I like white people spicy, which is barely at all.
I get it. No, I used to do like Mexican spicy.
Yeah.
But since like, 14 months ago I had the gastric sleeve surgery and so now I can't do spicy, but I'm okay with it. I can do mild, so I'm on the white people spicy now.
I just like, you know, I'll have a bottle of Tums with me and I'm like, well, I'm ready.
What else, where are some of your favorite eating spots?
Okay,
so we're gonna talk about favorite eating spots, favorite drinking spots.
Okay, I love this.
All right,
my two favorite things spots. You know, we just mentioned ramen. I really love going to Mikuni. It's just conveniently located by me.
I
go there all the time.
What are you ordering at Mikuni's?
I get the same shit every time I go somewhere and I like the food. I'll order the same thing.
I'm basic, yeah.
But I like the Incredible Roll. That's my favorite. And then there's one called the Vegetarian Roll. I think it's a vegan one. And I get that one because I don't like leftover fish from sushi.
Yeah.
So I eat like my regular roll first. And whenever I have leftover, it's usually the vegan one. And vegetables are fine the next day.
Right on. What about Mexican? Can you do Mexican food?
Oh, I love Mexican food.
Okay.
Let me think. I don't know. I mean, we have so many different little Mexican food joints. I think the one that I always order from is like right over by the other Safeway. And I'm forgetting the name now. It's like a little taqueria and it's delicious. Oh, I know what you're
talking about. It's out on Alhambra.
Yeah. That little one.
Yeah. Dude, they have the best, chilaquiles.
Ooh, good to know. They have the best
chilaquiles. They have some pretty good manila. I know the spot you're talking about. Something taqueria.
Yeah, and yeah. I'll get my burrito, and then if I'm feeling feisty, I will get flan.
All right. What about Indian food?
You know what? That's one that I haven't really found. I haven't figured it out. I don't go out for Indian food enough, but I really need to. I do go out for Thai sometimes. And I really see, I'm going to forget all the names of these places. It's the one by the Spaghetti Factory.
right next to it, like Thai Spoon?
Yeah,
or Thai like, Basil or Thai, no, that Thai Me Thai. Up? What is Thai?
Thai everything. What? It's one of my friend's like favorite places. It's, oh my God, I have it to my tongue.
I can see it.
Yeah.
I can see it in my head.
It's got like this cool mural on the top of it, and it's got like outdoor seating, and it's right on the corner. That's across the street from Starbucks.
We're going to let it go.
Yeah.
We're going to let it go.
People are going to find it. They're going to know where that is.
Let's talk about boozing. Where you like to booze?
Of course, I love Bear Dives. My favorite little queer spot. And then Snug. Big fan of Snug. Mm-hmm. I love them. They're always so sweet. And then I really like, if I'm taking myself out for like a creative day, I'll take myself to like Rochambeau. Mm-hmm. I'll dress up, give myself a bottle of wine, go draw at the bar over there. Like, that's my favorite thing to do.
How fun.
It's just so great. I'll bring stickers, make everyone take Depressed Happily stickers home with them.
You have Depressed Happily stickers?
I did. I actually brought one for you.
Oh, sweet. Oh, I'll get you some swag, too. I'm all about the swag. I love it. Me too.
It's like such a great way. Like, I love taking stickers into bars, and if they have stuff on their bathroom, I'll just stick one on the bathroom. It's my favorite thing.
See, that for me, and that's the street art.
Yeah.
That's the street kid in me coming. Like, I got to tag it.
Yeah.
That's the tagger in me. Like, I grew up in that era. Like, yeah, and I want to leave my mark.
Exactly. Like, I love it. I actually need to make more stickers. I used to have a ton, and now I need to get some new styles. I wrote down some stuff that I might make stickers for. Nice.
How'd you come up with the Depressed Happily logo and name and all that? Oh, man.
I've been thinking about that because I really don't know. I just, like, one, I love smiley faces. If you look at my artwork, I have smiley faces all over the place.
Uh-huh.
I love how creepy they can be, you know? It's supposed to be this, like, nice thing. But, like, the thing about mental health, especially when you're somebody who has depression, I think we all realize that, like, you know, the smile on your face may not be the authentic emotion that you actually have. And I'm always smiling. It is authentic, but it's not really how I feel on the inside most of the time.
Your Depressed Happily thing reminds me of, like, one of my favorite movies in the world is this movie called Sing Street. And it's about these kids that, like, form a band. It's like in the 80s, and they're living somewhere in England, and they're forming up. No, they're in Ireland, I think. Anyway, and they're forming a band, and they're trying to figure out, like, what style they are. Like, first they want to be like Duran Duran, right? But then they run across The Cure, and he's like, this is happy sad.
Yeah.
And we know we live in a shitty spot. We know we got dealt a shitty hand in life, but we're happy and we're going to make the best of it. And yeah. So it's happy sad.
And that's where Depressed Happily, like, initially I wanted it to be Happily Depressed, but the URL was very expensive. And I was like, what if we just flipped it? And I was like, well, look at that. It's $25. So I bought.
So someone is sitting on Happily Sad.
I really want to get. I want to one day when I have like that fuck you money. I want to buy the URL just to have it.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of how it came about, and like, you know, I use a lot of colors with like very dark subject matter for that same purpose of like. You can have like really big and unfortunate emotions. You can have terrible circumstances in life, but you can also look at the brighter side of things as well. You know, it's good to bring like color and light into a world that is not always so kind to us all the time.
I love that. That's so great. That's great.
So that's Depressed Happily for you.
Yeah. I have this perspective on life where I'm like, okay, look, we're fucked. It's shitty.
Yeah.
But I can do the best I can to make the 10 feet around me.
You know, the motto that I have lived my life with for the last 5 years since I got out of the hospital is, if I were on my deathbed today and I knew I was going to die tomorrow and I looked back at my life, would I be disappointed or would I be satisfied?
Mm-hmm.
And right now, things are looking pretty good.
Right.
But it makes me not be such a pessimist all the time. Because we literally have one life to live. Why would I live it being angry at everything when I could choose to be a little bit more happy? You know, glass half full is not a bad way to live.
It's not. It's not. Like, people say, like, you're silly for, like, being that. But no, you're silly for, like, just... Yeah,
we don't have to be like ignorant to the things in the world that are going on, but we don't have to constantly be so, you know, brought down by that. We have to find joy and happiness in some ways. Otherwise, I'm just going to be back in the hospital.
So how hard is it, though, with social media? Like, do you find yourself having to put your phone down? Do you have like my Instagram will stop sending me alerts like at 10:30 at night? Like, do you have?
Oh, I should be better.
Okay.
I think living alone has really made it where, like, you know, sometimes I'll just be like scrolling through for like such a long time, and it's purely just because I want like human interaction.
Okay.
And it's also because I'm really good at putting off projects and being like, oh no, I'm on Instagram, oops. Yeah. You know,
so you're not necessarily doom scrolling, but you're kind of like just bored scrolling.
Yeah, basically. And then I'm also just kind of like a hype man, so I'll like everything.
Okay.
I'll message people and be like, oh my god, that's so great. Uh-huh. Like, you know, I love making people feel good, so if I'm gonna be on Instagram for hours, I might as well be at least a little nice.
Yeah. I like being a hype person, and I like promoting my friends.
Yeah. So
you'll probably see me sharing your stuff eventually. Love I don't know it. If I haven't already. I don't know if I have, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
We wrap the podcast up with a little segment I like to call 5 Easy Questions. Are you ready?
I'm here for it.
Okay. So this is question number 1. Who or what inspires you?
Ooh, I love that one. It is an easy question, but such a good one. You know, everything inspires me. I find that when I try to lock myself away to paint, I have nothing to say. Mm-hmm. But when I go out and live my life, even if it's going to a bar and people watching, I have so much more to say. So I think, like, you know, as a painter, I think I've learned how to stop and smell the roses more and pay attention to things around me to gain, you know, some creative influence for myself. So I'd say a little bit of everything.
How inspiring is the city right now? Like, it's a little bit cold, the colors are changing, there's leaves all over the ground, there's that energy of the holidays are about to hit. How inspiring is the city right now?
You know, it is. It's like pretty, I mean, outside my window there's been like protesting and all kinds of stuff, and seeing all of that, seeing the holidays, everything going on, it's really getting me into a headspace of wanting to create some pretty cool works. I don't know what they are, but I'm gonna make some fun stuff very soon.
that's dope. All right, what are you currently binging? Like, what content are you just like, I can't get enough of this right now? And it could be like a show you're streaming, a podcast you're listening to, a series of books. Like, what are you just binging right now?
Okay, I'm always binging this. I love podcasts, big fan.
Uh-huh.
I specifically love true crime.
Oh, shit.
And I'm a huge fan of Last Podcast on the Left.
Okay.
They are a wild bunch. I like cautiously suggest them to my friends. I'm like, these guys are pretty wild.
They are a little bit. I've listened every once in a while.
Yeah. And I have listened to them for the last like 7 years.
I love, every Monday morning I listen to the My Favorite Murder, the minisode. They do a minisode on Mondays, and then they do a regular episode on Thursdays.
I'll do, like, Last Podcast does one on Wednesdays, and then they have their full episode on Fridays. And then another one that I listen to is Red Handed, and they're from Europe, so they do a lot of European true crime.
Ooh.
So those are my two favorites. And then occasionally I put Dateline on to take a nap, you know?
What about they have a podcast. True crime, do you know enough about Jack the Ripper to talk a little bit about Jack the Ripper?
Oh, Jack the Ripper is a wild one. They don't even know who he is, but they kind of have some suspects.
You know what I heard about one of the suspects? That it was the Queen's doctor.
Oh,
that's why he never got caught.
Interesting. I've heard some stuff about, like, it was a royal family member.
Yeah, that it was something to do with the royal family, and like that's why he never got caught.
That is so bananas.
That it wasn't necessarily that they couldn't find him, is that they looked the other way.
If you haven't, you should listen to H.H. Holmes. Very interesting.
Okay,
we'll talk. He's like a murder mansion.
Oh shit.
And it's from it involves the World Fair of in Chicago in like the late 18 I think it's like the 1890s or something.
That's
like that.
That's already creepy.
Yeah, super creepy. Very cool. And he got caught, so that's cool.
Oh good.
Justice.
Good. All right. What are you afraid of?
Oh, aside from heights. Well, I'm not afraid of death. That's pretty cool. That's nice. A lot of people are afraid of that.
Were you ever afraid of death?
No, I've always been very curious about it, honestly. Uh-huh. Maybe that's why I like true crime. It's very interesting. I don't know.
What are your thoughts on death?
I think death is just a natural part of life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes life has just got to go.
But does it go on afterwards? Is there an are we an energy?
Oh, you know what? I'm an atheist, and I just don't know what happens. And I don't know. I mean, sometimes I tell myself like there's something after, but I really don't. I'm just kind of like, we'll figure it out. I don't think anyone's ever going to know until you die.
Do you hope there's an after?
I don't know. I kind of hope that we just get born into another dimension. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe this is the dimension where I'm just an artist and the next one I'm a millionaire. Who knows?
Okay. I used to be terrified of death. Like I would lose sleep over, like I would go crying to my parents at night and be like, I don't want to die. Yeah.
That I think after being like so depressed for so many years since I was a kid, I've just always been like, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But now
I'm like, I'm cool with death. And like, I used to have this perspective of life of like, I'm running out of time. I'm not going to do anything. And now I'm like, I have all this time and I'm going to do everything.
You know what I am afraid of? Natural disasters.
Oh, because we can't control it.
I cannot watch any documentaries. I can't talk about it too much. Like, that's what gets my anxiety going. I'm like, what if, you know, if I see anything about like sinkholes and stuff, and I'll go on like a rabbit hole through like Reddit of like reading people's stuff about like natural disasters, and then I just get myself super anxious. So I would say that is my biggest fear.
Okay. All right. Natural disasters. Natural disasters and sinkholes, or just sinkholes?
Just natural disasters. In general. Like super volcanoes? Oh my God, no.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about that here. But do you ever like find yourself worrying about shit like, oh my God, a hurricane, like we're not gonna get that.
Like it reminds me of being a kid and being like terrified of the Bermuda Triangle, which we've never had to worry about as adults.
what do you think? I think the Bermuda Triangle is like, it's just like this, it's just this weird thing that it messes with the instruments. Like it's a magnetic field that just messes with the instruments and it causes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's like some kind of natural phenomenon that's related to like the magnetic field of some sort. But I'm not a scientist and I don't know what I'm talking about. But I would agree with you.
Neither am I. All right. Okay. We kind of maybe touched on this subject a little bit, but okay. You're on death row. What's your last meal?
Oh, okay. I would say my last meal. So I love to cook. I'm a big fan of cooking.
Okay.
And I'd say probably my favorite thing that I love making is bœuf bourguignon, which is a...
What is that?
It's a French dish, and it translates to beef burgundy. And it's a stew that you cook for like 6 hours. And it's like, it's delicious. It's got... Oh, it's just so good. It's like beef and onions and red wine and a lot of fresh herbs, butter, of course. Okay, so I'd probably do that with some like mashed potatoes, and then I'd probably finish that off with ice cream.
That's the second time today you've talked about mashed potatoes.
I fucking love potatoes.
Is it a potato thing?
Potatoes and bread. That is it. You know, if I was on a desert island and I had to eat one thing, it'd be toast.
Are you Irish?
Yes. Can you tell? Because I'm very pale.
Well, you said potatoes and then you said bread, so then I was like, that's poor food.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
It's I love poor food.
Yeah, all the best food was poor food.
Honestly, Kraft mac and cheese.
Oh man,
actually that new Cheetos one, even better.
There's a Cheetos mac and cheese.
Yeah, a friend of mine convinced me, and I got some, and I had it the other day, and was like, this is blowing my mind. This is what Kraft mac and cheese used to be before they changed the recipe.
Okay.
It's neon delicious.
All right. The last question is, what's next? What's next for you? Next could be next week, next year, next, what's your next? This is what I want to accomplish.
Yeah, you know what? I am just incredibly ambitious, and I take every opportunity that I can, and my next is not really anything specific. It's just to continue with the momentum that I have and take more opportunities that serve me, honestly. Mm-hmm. I just want to keep taking on more. Like, I don't want to just show in a gallery. I want to have art that's an experience. You know, I want to put on something that's more of like a show in which I can make all the elements to the show and it like interactive.
Have you been to the Van Gogh experience?
I am not gonna lie, I went to the one in San Francisco and I was so disappointed.
Oh wow.
It was like, my friend and I, you know, you paid your tickets, you went in. They gave us a cushion to sit on the floor, and it was a Van Gogh cushion. So it had his like face on it, which I thought was hilarious. I'm like, are you gonna straight up sit on his face? This is so.
Mom, why is he smiling?
Honestly, and like this poor man, like he had some mental health issues, chopped his ear off, incredible artist, and we're just sitting on his face in San Francisco in a big room, and they just had the same thing like looped over and over again. And they had like a staircase that you could go on, and that was like the only element of it that was like extra cool.
Okay.
And I was super disappointed. I thought it was gonna be like a much more comprehensive experience.
Like, it's gonna be something like really immersive.
Yeah. And I love, like, Van Gogh's a cool dude, and his artwork is beautiful. I mean, it's everywhere, but it was so ahead of its time when he made it. And he's such an interesting dude, and I love his art and everything. So I was really disappointed.
Oh, bummer. Okay. All right.
But you know what? I know they have other exhibits around, and maybe we just got a really shitty one.
maybe. All right, man. All right. So we're going to wrap it up. Did we cover everything you wanted to cover? Are we leaving anything out?
I think we kind of dipped our toes in everything.
Nice. Do you want to plug your website and your Instagram, and where can people find you?
You can follow me at Depressed Happily on Instagram. DepressedHappily.com is my website. My TikTok is also Depressed Happily, but I don't really post as much on there as I should.
Yeah, I don't do TikTok. I don't know.
I'm trying. I want to hire, like, one day when I can, I'm hiring a Gen Z, and they're going to do it for me, because I just don't care.
Yeah.
I don't want to do like a dance and be like, you know, ooh, mental health. Like, yeah. No.
Yeah, I love Instagram. I'm happy with Instagram. Like, all my friends are on Instagram.
Yeah.
All my relatives are on Facebook, you know, and that's...
For real, though.
And I'm fine with that, right?
So those are the platforms I'm on. Find me at Bear Dive and Snug.
Nice.
Just all over Sacramento. Say hi.
All right.
I probably have a sticker for you.
That's awesome. All right. Let's get out of here. Thanks for coming on the pod.
Anytime.
I really appreciate you.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.